Hey there, it's Will O'Callaghan here from Off The Ball, and before you dive into this podcast, here's one you're going to want to stick in your diary. This coming Friday, Apple Green's annual 24/7 event is back, and for just one day only, they've got loads of brilliant offers across their stores. You can pick up a chicken fillet roll or a breakfast roll for just €2.47, have a car wash for €2.47, or grab a packet of Tato crisps for just 24 cent. There are some great food offers too. You've got Whoppers, selected 6-inch Subway sandwiches, Taco Bell beefy melt burritos, and Chopstick small bite boxes, all available for, you guessed it, €2.47. It's only happening this Friday, so don't miss out. Head along to your local Apple Green store and make the most of these fantastic one-day-only offers. Terms and conditions do apply. And now, enjoy your podcast.
Off The Ball, GAA.
Look, I said it there a while ago, this place, what to do for people across the country, really, you know, and you talk about the kids, but the support to give families as well and parents.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Formula One Pod on Off The Ball. Brought to you by KitKat. Hit pause, have a break,
have a KitKat. Button.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the F1 Pod. And as always, the F1 Pod on Off The Ball is brought to you by KitKat, bringing breaks to the fastest sport in the world. Hashtag have a break. I'm here with Kira beside me. Kira, how are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm happy that we're in this European swing of seasons.
Yes.
We seem to have races all the time now until suddenly there's going to be...
Summer break is looming. I'm actually really sad about it.
I'm scared. It's looming, but we have Spa to talk about from last week. We have Hungary to look forward to. And we're also joined by the wonderful Declan Quigley. Declan, how are you?
Well, very well, yeah. Cheers. Nice to see you again, Eve, Kira. Yeah. How are you?
No problem. I imagine you're actually very busy right now with the Tour de France.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just coming to the end of the third week of that one, so I'm a bit bamboozled. It's all wheels, but it's all a bit, lots of different things to take on board. Yeah, we're exhausted, as you might imagine, and so there's some cyclists are tired too, yeah.
So I'm going to give you a break from the cycling to chat about F1 for about 20 minutes here today. I wanted to start with something that interested me, which is how you felt that the new regulations worked with Spa as a track. There's been a lot of conversations recently about Spa becoming a rotating circuit. Are we losing some of these historical circuits in F1? How did you find yourself watching the new regs there?
Yeah, I'm a bit of a crusty old Luddite some of the time. And I have, generally speaking, loved the regulations this year because I think we've had terrific racing. Having said that, it was disastrous at Spa. I mean, it was just too much, wasn't it? I mean, the cars were... what was the line? They were like, you know, Formula 3 levels of power, but with Formula 1 levels of downforce. That means they're easy flat through Puan, one of the biggest and most extraordinary challenges in the history of Formula 1. I mean, it's long since been relatively handy in qualifying to go flat through Eau Rouge and up through Radion. That's been a little bit... So, I mean, it's still heart in the mouth. You still hold your breath a little bit, but it's relatively easy for them. It was even more easy, wasn't it? And all of that, the difficulties around deploying the battery, trying to manage it around the lap, I thought it was painful. And it was too much. And it was a very odd experience watching the race because you're watching, you know, the battle for the lead and they're only a second apart and it's for lap after lap. But you're not really all that excited about it. I should have been more excited about it, and I was early in the season. This, having said that, is one of the worst circuits they'll suffer with the difficulty of trying to sort of use up your energy and save it all around the lap and deploy it in as measured a fashion as you possibly can. And there are so many different sort of variables that can affect that, you know, your grip levels, aero levels, everything that plays into it, and you've got changing variables during the race as well that are going to affect the deployment. And they're just sort of trying to manage this tiny bit of battery power to assist them. It's disastrous. And we'll see something similar, I suppose, at Monza, maybe one or two other tracks. Hopefully it should be a little bit better at Hungary. But they can't change the rules quick enough, really. And it's a sort of a signal, I think, of the sort of political... there's so many other factors that go into this. And the manufacturers coming in, they're demanding that... the world, you know, that Formula One is in the real world a little bit, that they can relate these to the sort of research and development that is being sort of is going into to automotive, regular automotive universe. So you can kind of understand that the likes of Audi and other teams that have come in and other engine manufacturers are committed to this particular set of rules. But honestly, it's not working. It's not what we signed up for as F1 fans. We want to see these drivers absolutely on the limit. We don't want to see them going flat through Puan and almost one hand on the steering wheel and their elbow on the cockpit side, which is the way it was for way too much. I mean, it's the gaps between the drivers themselves is vanishingly small. You know, that was the biggest gap in qualifying. I think just over 3/10, wasn't it? In but obviously it's a 7-kilometer circuit, longest circuit of the year by miles. It's tiny, but part of that is because these machines are relatively easy to drive to the limit, and they should be much so much more difficult. So, yeah, generally speaking, I've enjoyed the fact that the cars can follow each other this year. The sort of boost function versus the, you know, departure of DRS this year has worked. The racing has been made interesting. So whatever they've got aerodynamically, that's kind of working. But the deployment of battery energy is a disaster, and it needs really quick remedial help. And I think that the powers that be, they need to knock their heads together and realize they're going to kill the golden goose if they leave it like this for long.
Speaking of disaster, George Russell, let's start with George. He had a disastrous weekend at Spa. He said that qualifying was super frustrating. He couldn't get that straight line speed. He doesn't know why, he can't pinpoint it, and then couldn't even get the first lap in on the Sunday because of the collision he suffered with Lewis Hamilton. So he DNF'd very early on. He's now third place in the driver's standings. He's now behind former teammate Lewis Hamilton. He's now 50 points away from Kimi Antonelli. Does this just cement that this is Kimi's now to win, and this has just been a disastrous season so far for George, despite the fact that he was, you know, favourite at the beginning of the season?
Yeah, I mean, it sort of does. I mean, he's got a bit of momentum, hasn't he, Kimi? He said, even when I wasn't winning, I still had the momentum. That was his quote afterwards, which didn't make a whole lot of sense. But what he was trying to say was that he hadn't lost the head, and that he was, he could understand the reasons. He's failed to score twice, I think. George has failed to score on three occasions. We're 10 races in. We're still not quite the halfway point. Hungary's the halfway point of the season. 50-point lead sounds a lot. 25 for a win, and throw in a few sprint races. Actually, things could change really quickly for George. And in fairness to him, I think Kimi has had the edge a little bit. He's tended to put together slightly better weekends. He's got 6 pole positions to George's 4. They have dominated qualifying, so they have got the best package. There's not much between them, really. And I think that there's still every chance that he can come back into the equation. I thought it was fascinating that Toto Wolff said, he actually said, I'm going to have to put my hand around his shoulders. We accept all the blame. There was no recrimination for his radio meltdown, which I think everyone agreed was kind of understandable. And what we have kind of learned in the last few days since the race was that both he and Kimi had the same software problem off the start line. But just force of circumstance meant that Kimi Antonelli ended up in the lead of the race into Puhon, Lecombe, at the end of the Kemmel Strait, whereas George Russell was trying to recover and come around to the outside of Lewis Hamilton. Actually, I think there was potentially poor judgment on Russell's fault. I thought Lewis Hamilton was a little bit unfortunate to cop that 5-second penalty, which ultimately, you know, put him behind Leclerc. But that would be my view, that Hamilton was unfortunate there. I think George Russell kind of agreed with that, didn't he? He said it was just a racing incident. But yes, they both had the same start line failure to reset issue. But when they went around, they both went around La Source, plunged down the hill. They both found themselves with 30 to 40% less power than they should have had, and or less battery. And then, it allowed Max Verstappen to go around Kimi Antonelli, sweep up the hill. Then Antonelli, you know, gets an aerodynamic, he gets the toe and gets a run into Lacombe. He gets the lead of the race. He's home free, and it's a fantastic day for him once he clears Leclerc later on. Meanwhile, Russell further back has a completely different set of circumstances. He's swamped by two cars. He gets around Hamilton. The Hamilton tags him. It's all over really quickly. He had a different problem in qualifying. And Antonelli didn't have that, but Piastri had it. And it was something buried deep in the software, really complicated scenario where he ended up with deploying too much power early in the lap. He was starved at the back end of the lap. Good first couple of sectors, disastrous final sector. Didn't know what was going wrong. They were even looking at his driving style, trying to change different driving techniques, thinking that he was doing something wrong. And eventually they discovered that actually it was on the Mercedes side. So yeah, that was, I think it's indicative of the complex nature of these automobiles, and the fact that they're still at the sort of nascent point. They're just literally being born, these machines, and there's lots of little reliability glitches, and that will even out. At the moment, Antonelli has the momentum. He's got the advantage. When you've got a points advantage, of course, you can afford to be a little bit protective of your situation, so you can manage your and you know, you're more likely to finish then and score. But at the moment, it's all guns for Antonelli. But it's way too early to rule out Russell.
I think as well, when you look at Mercedes, their priority right now still should be focusing entirely on the constructors. I mean, yeah, They're 73 points ahead of Ferrari at the moment in the Constructors' Championship.
Only 73
points. But that's exactly, that really isn't a lot over the course of a season where, as you said, we're still not halfway through. I think there's this sort of assumption among fans and pundits that Antonelli, it's his championship to lose and blah, blah, blah. But for the bigger picture for Mercedes, and where the money is for Mercedes, is ensuring that both of their drivers finish as high up as possible week in, week out, because 73 points is very small in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, and the Constructors is absolutely where the money is, and the teams have always gone to it. Having said that, I've always got the sense for a long time that Toto Wolff sees an even bigger picture, and that his responsibility to Mercedes is to ensure that there is a clean and fair fight. I mean, they will deploy team orders where it's required in order to sort of secure a good situation and a drivers' championship to stop them from fighting each other. And they're not quite papaya rules level, are they? But I have always got a sense that he will manage a situation to ensure that the drivers' champion goes to one of his drivers, and that and that's good for business. That's good for everybody. That if, because more eyeballs are on the Drivers' Championship than are on the Constructors' Championship. And for many a long year in the history of this sport, McLaren, Williams, when they were in their pomp, didn't really care about the drivers at all. They didn't care about the Drivers' Championship, and they didn't care about the drivers. They would win a world, Williams would win a world championship and then sack their world champion immediately, get rid of them, because they saw the engineering collective of that team as being above the sort of the minor issue of the drivers, and that maybe they were a little bit snooty about the very idea that we look at the Drivers' Championship more. But the Drivers' Championship is effectively a team's championship anyway. And of course, they've got more money than Greece's. They will have no problem meeting that that budget cap. So the big teams will certainly take a more sort of a macro view of the thing and think about, you know, other factors other than the Constructors' Championship. It'd be different if you're Alpine. I mean, you're scrapping for every point. Williams these days, you know, that's they're looking at the bottom line constantly. But I do kind of think that Toto Wolff will try to ensure that he wins the Drivers' Championship this year, and hope that the Constructors' Championship follows.
As we mentioned there, there are such close margins between Ferrari and Mercedes. And just again, to look at the driver standings, we have got Lewis Hamilton, who has just slipped 5 points clear of Russell. He is now second. He had not the best weekend ever. You know, he had the crash on the Saturday in practice, as well as hitting his mechanic. He had the 5 second penalty. It was actually a really messy weekend for Lewis, but he still secured a decent fourth. And I really feel like himself and Leclerc are really yo-yoing this. They're really sharing the successes of this season so far, have both secured long-awaited wins, both having a taste of the podiums. Do you think it's still a chance that Lewis Hamilton will secure his eighth championship?
Oh, 100%, yeah, yeah. Oh, goodness me, you could not rule him out. 45 points down. He's he was 0.002 of a second slower than Charles Leclerc in qualifying around 7 kilometres. I mean, that is just nothing. That doesn't exist. He put the hand up pretty quick, didn't he? I mean, he crashed in final practice. Super compromised situation on setup for, you know, he said from then on he was on the back foot. And if the stuff was going wrong and you find yourself in the wrong place and, you know, you end up with sort of dumb little penalties. He was quite sanguine about it, wasn't he? Even on the radio when he said, you know, when they finally plucked up the courage to tell him that he had a 5 second penalty. He said but he's very, very sort of drama free actually, and afterwards his comments were that, you know, look, I'll take some of the responsibility for the fact that I wasn't as close to the front as possible. But absolutely, they have a really strong package, and Ferrari will take enormous heart from the fact that they have their little sort of sewing engine motor or whatever it is. It's not obviously producing the same level of power, and yet they were able to be super competitive right down into the sort of the final quarter of a race against Mercedes at that racetrack. You know, it's, you've got to have a big old engine at Spa, and they don't, and they still finish second. So I think they'll take enormous heart from that, and I think they'll believe that they have a fantastic chance going to Hungary and beyond.
I think Lewis Hamilton slipping ahead of Russell in the Drivers' Championship means we've ruined our lovely Noah's Ark, where it was Mercedes, Mercedes, Ferrari, Ferrari, McLaren, McLaren, Red Bull, Red Bull. Yeah. Now we have Mercedes, Ferrari, Mercedes, Ferrari. But the McLaren still staying ahead of the Red Bulls in terms of the Drivers' Championship, it always seems odd to me when I remember that for Norris and Piastri, who have been quite invisible all season comparative to their success of last season, still picking up those points more consistently than Verstappen and Hadjar and those Red Bulls. And yet Verstappen is the one who every week you're saying that was a drive that is probably better than the car kind of earned.
100%. I mean, you know, he's out of contract. Oh, no, he's not out of contract. He has the ability to trigger his escape clause, hasn't he, Max? I think everyone would have him. I think he is the best. I think he is on the radio every single race saying, oh, I've got no grip. Oh, this is terrible. This is terrible. And he's like, sticks it on the front row. He finishes second. I mean, he's there all the time. He finds a way. He's at the top of his game. He's the best in the world. You know, I'd break the bank and lock him into a 5-year deal immediately. And I think he's super wobbly at Red Bull. They're losing their engineering base, aren't they? They're starting to sort of desert the ship a little bit. So, I mean, I think that it's an interesting situation. You've got to be impressed with the way that Red Bull have turned it around, and they didn't have an opportunity to develop their engine because they, you know, obviously have the best power unit, much to their disgruntlement. So, I mean, it's all coming on the aero side and on obviously on the energy deployment side, and it's going well for them. And he's also less grumpy about the rules, although he wasn't holding. He had an odd situation at Spa, didn't he? Because he's as Belgian as he is Dutch, really, you know, born in Belgium mum and all that, and obviously he sort of sees himself as Dutch, but he will have known that he had a lot of fans there and that it is a sensitive situation in terms of his nationality and that it is the best racetrack in the universe. So he kind of had to measure his comments just a teeny weeny bit. But also the fact that he's going incredibly well meant that he's not quite as grumpy as he might be. But yeah, it was a very good situation. It'll be a really good situation for them going to Hungary. And as you would imagine, as the rules develop, everyone gets the hang of it and figures out how to come up with solutions. These are huge organizations of more than 1,000 people, and there are a lot of people dedicated to fixing every challenge that they face. And you know, it's natural that we're going to have this condensing of the gaps between them, and that the wheat, the chaff and all that, and they'll separate and they'll rise to the top. Now we'll mix our metaphors and get a couple of the better one next time, but basically he's naturally going to gravitate towards the top as they get a bit better.
I can't help but feel like we're seeing a slight copycat of last season when it comes to Max. You know, when he took that lead at, you know, the start of the race in Spa, it was just very exciting. And I almost feel like Hadjar this weekend took on a very Checo role as well, in that, you know, he's able to give him a valuable toe, you know, during qualifying, and helped him get up there and, you know, to have Hadjar fight so well from the back of the grid due to the engine changes. It was really fascinating. And I feel like with this podium now for Max, could we be seeing after summer break, Red Bull have got so much pressure because they know they could be losing their star boy. Could we be seeing, you know, Max potentially really become a threat like he did with McLaren last season?
You make a really savage point about Hadjar and how he's supporting, and also the toe. I mean, Max wouldn't necessarily have been in amongst the Ferraris and the McLarens without that toe. So it nearly went wrong, but they got it right and they nailed it. And he is an amazing and wonderful support act, and Hadjar is solid in that team at the moment. He's ideal, isn't he? He's quick, but he's not too quick that he's upsetting the superstar. And I'd say it's easy enough to upset Max Verstappen, really, so you wouldn't want to be quick too often, but you wouldn't want to be slow either. You're out of there. So it's a delicate balancing act, and Hadjar's doing a super job. Do I think that they're coming? It's closing up. Anyone makes a mistake, gets anything slightly wrong, like Hamilton in final practice, end up on the back foot. I mean, Lando Norris had a good old shout of a podium, had to take all the power unit grid place drop of 10 places, but he was right there in the game. And had things gone another way with the virtual safety cars, even from 13th on the grid, he could have been in with a shout there. So I think the McLarens are in the hunt too.
Yeah, and just before we look ahead to Hungary, and just before we let you go today, as it always happens when we approach the final race before the summer break, we have these rumours swirling. We're entering into a period where there could be driver changes happening. And yet everyone that I'm kind of speaking to is saying we probably won't see a huge silly season this year, just purely because of the new regulations. Their teams are still settling into their new roles and drivers still settling in. Is that something that you're anticipating? It might be a quieter season, perhaps Max Verstappen excluded?
Oh, if Verstappen goes, the whole thing is just... It's like everything moves around then, doesn't it? I mean, where is he going? If he leaves Red Bull and goes to McLaren, presumably it's Piastri's is gone. So what happens to him? I mean, so you could have a big domino fall then and things go, moving everywhere. If he goes to Mercedes, is it Russell out? Is it... weirdly, I'd nearly get rid of Kimi, actually. Even though he's leading the championship, he's doing everything right, he's serene. But he's still a kid, isn't he? And it might... they don't get on terribly well, Max Verstappen and George Russell.
No.
But I'm sure, you know, you could fix all of that with,
that'd be fun
with the right
that
wages.
That would be so much.
Yeah. It would, yeah. Yeah, I think it's absolutely fascinating, and it's all based on Max. He could go to Ferrari. Why not? You know, Lewis is a big old wage bill. They could give him a job as an ambassador or something, pension him off. Or Leclerc. I mean, Leclerc would make a great teammate for Max because he loves everyone, doesn't he? He seems to get on with everyone, and he's still pretty quick. It's all about Max. Down the back of the grid, there are plenty of drivers that must be feeling a bit nervous as well. Lawson, I mean, poor Liam Lawson, because Solov's going very well in Formula 2 at the moment, the Bulgarian driver, Red Bull supported, and he's definitely knocking on the door. They do like to change their drivers, although Helmut Marko, the sort of grim reaper of young drivers, is now no longer part of the Red Bull setup, so we'll see what they have planned. Plenty of other drivers, Carlos Sainz Jr., he's not so happy. I mean, something is likely to happen at Cadillac, isn't it? They signed two old drivers, which is a great move for their first year, but as they become more established, you know, everyone's going to wonder what the outright potential of that automobile is, so they'll want a young Turk in there to see what he can achieve, and you know whether there's a little bit more potential lap time in there. So yeah, Valtteri Bottas has been looking a little bit flaky. Franco Colapinto brings a lot of money to the Alpine team. They could definitely do with it. He's definitely not anything like as good as Pierre Gasly, who's been on the podium this year, but he's... I think Flavio Briatore will keep Colapinto for the money unless someone comes with another big old wedge. So, yeah. But there's lots of other drivers that, I mean, Esteban Ocon, he's quite vulnerable, isn't he? He's been beaten quite regularly.
And you could see some movement this year as opposed to maybe letting it kind of sit for another year and see how the new regs change. Do you think there's a lot of drivers who would be a bit kind of precarious?
They're always precarious. I mean, there's always someone, you know, everybody wants to drive in Formula One. So someone is always pecking at that, knocking at that door. You're always under pressure. That is the biggest pressure cooker in the sporting universe. what we had at the end of 24 and 25, where there were no, there were no driver changes at all. That just doesn't happen. I mean, that was just an absolute freak. There'll be one or two driver changes if Verstappen decides to trigger his get out clause and move somewhere. Then there could be a little bit of an avalanche and drivers moving all over the place. Yeah, so I wouldn't be at all surprised to see a bit of movement.
And sorry.
No, I'm just saying maybe we will get some excitement now over the summer break without any racing. Unfortunately, Declan, we do have to let you go, but hopefully we'll be chatting to you soon, and we look forward to hopefully having a more exciting race in Hungary.
I know.
Than Spa.
Fingers crossed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you.
The F1 pod on Off the Wall is brought to you by KitKat, bringing breaks to the fastest sport in the world. # have a break, and we'll chat to you next week.
The Formula One pod on Off the Ball, brought to you by KitKat. Hit pause, have a break,
have a KitKat.
Button.
Hey there, it's Will O'Callaghan here from Off the Ball, and before you dive into this podcast, here's one you're going to want to stick in your diary. This coming Friday, Applegreen's annual 24/7 event is back, and for just one day only, they've got loads of brilliant offers across their stores. You can pick up a chicken fillet roll or a breakfast roll for just €2.47, have a car wash for €2.47, or grab a packet of Tato crisps for just 24 cent. There are some great food offers too. You've got Whoppers, selected 6-inch Subway sandwiches, Taco Bell beefy melt burritos, and Chopstick small bite boxes, all available for, you guessed it, €2.47. It's only happening this Friday, so don't miss out. Head along to your local Applegreen store and make the most of these fantastic one-day-only offers. Terms and conditions do apply. And now, enjoy your podcast.